clerk will call the docket.
Andrews was the first county governor in Northern Florida, Eddie Lawson, who would be the chair of the council, Christopher M. Michelle, Barbara D. Lawson, Summer L. State,
You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Bruce Arrett. Henry McLaughlin and I represent the appellant, Yvonne Harris Andrews. Before I begin my argument, I respectfully request to reserve 3 minutes for Mr. McLaughlin to make rebuttal argument. This appeal presents a clear jurisdictional question. Do Virginia Code 15.2-1507 and Virginia Code 2.2-3006 grant a circuit court jurisdiction to decide an appeal of a hearing officer's decision on a grievance pursuant to Virginia Code 15.2-1507? I submit that the clear answer to this question is no. This is so for several reasons, including the applicable code sections 15.2-1507 and 2.2-3006. But it's also true because it's correct under this court's decisions on statutory construction in subject matter jurisdiction. The strongest argument I submit is the plain language of the statute. 15.2-1507 circumscribes circuit court review and intervention and grievance procedures under that statute. There's really four instances in which a circuit court can either review or intervene under that code section. Number one, 15.2-1507A7B provides for procedural compliance reviews. Is the governmental entity subject to the grievance procedure complying procedurally with the grievance procedure? Second, the circuit court has jurisdiction to review appeals regarding grievability and access to the procedure. That's set forth in subsection A9 of that code section. Third, there's a procedure for a petition for implementation pursuant to subsection A11. Finally,
may I interrupt you there?
Yes.
In the implementation jurisdiction, would the losing party in the grievance have the opportunity to defend itself?
I was thinking about that question before the argument began, Your Honor, and my response would be that I'm not sure whether or not the circuit court has the ability to make a decision on whether or not implementation should be granted because the hearing officer's decision is not consistent with law or written policy. I mean, I think that issue actually came up not in the exact same context as this case, but in another case before this court, and I'm trying to find that.
Well, just think through how this would look. If the winning party goes to the circuit court with a grievance win and says, I need a court order just to make it happen because they're not complying with the hearing officer's decision, is the circuit court's power simply to say, right, here's an order? Or does the circuit court hold a hearing? Does it receive any responsive pleadings? Are there issues in contest? Because I'm not suggesting it is. I'm just wondering, because I don't understand it any more than you do.
Your Honor, I found the case that I was trying to refer to earlier. And that case was actually cited in a decision from the Norfolk Circuit Court regarding a grievance panel decision. But it's Department of Environmental Quality v. Wright. The citation is 256 VA 236. That's a case from 1998. And what it says is a circuit court's authority, according to the statute, is limited to the act of implementing or refusing to implement the hearing officer's ruling. A circuit court lacks authority to consider the grievance de novo, to modify the hearing officer's decision, to substitute the court's view of the facts for those of the hearing officer, or to invoke its broad equitable powers to arrive at a decision that the court may think is fair. The court may only implement.
But you know, it's analogous to arbitration, taking an arbitration award and having it enforced. But if we use that analogy, that gets mixed up a little bit too, because there is some outer boundary of judicial review of an arbitration award that goes beyond the scope of the agreement.
I think that's correct. I mean, I think that there can be certain instances in an arbitration enforcement context where the jurisdiction that the enforcing party is requesting enforcement of would say, there's something so problematic with this arbitration or the arbitration agreement or the conduct of the arbitration that I decline to, the court says it declines to enforce that arbitration. I mean, I think that that also invokes this provision in 15.2.1507. It's A10. Sorry, it's a lengthy statute. A10A6, and it's an injunctive provision that says that the decision of the panel or hearing officer shall be final and binding and shall be consistent with provisions of law and written policy.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure whether or not in an implementation proceeding the circuit court would have the authority to review the implementation request in light of that injunctive provision. But I submit that that's not really relevant to this appeal.
If your answer to the question is they can only implement, and if we look at 7 that you've just read to us, which indicates that it shall be consistent with the provisions of law and written policy, well, obviously 1507 includes a provision that allows someone to review to see if it's subject to written policy. If there is no appeal to the circuit court, who determines whether it's consistent with law?
Well, I think that that determination is made by either the chief administrative officer of the relevant governmental entity, or if that administrative
officer... Where in 1507 does that say
I will,
that? 1507 says the chief administrative officer looks at written policy to see if it's consistent.
Yes. I'm sorry, perhaps I misunderstood the question. Was the question who reviews questions of law, whether
correct.
It's conflicts
correct.
With law?
It shall be consistent with provisions of law. Under your theory of this scheme, it ends with the hearing officer, the three-person panel. No one gets to decide if it's consistent with law.
I think it's correct that there's no appeal right.
Well, that's you're answering around the question as well. Let's go back. General Assembly said it shall be consistent, that it's final, and shall be consistent with provisions of law and written policy. And then they immediately say that written policy gets reviewed by the CAO, and they leave law hanging. So, there's one conclusion would be, well, the panel, a hearing officer, is the final adjudicator of law. But that doesn't make sense if the CAO is the final adjudicator of policy, that the intermediate step would be the final adjudicator of law. Now, I went back to try to find where that might have come from, looking at the legislative history. And the best that I can figure is that it comes from the Administrative Process Act, in fact, before it was recodified, when it was still 2.1. You find the exact same language in the state context rather than a housing authority context. And in that instance, you have the written policy being reviewed by the agency administrator or whoever the final administrative officer is within the agency. And again, it doesn't say who reviews law, but in an APA context, the Court of Appeals has broad APA review authority. And so it's apparent that the statute from which this language was borrowed has a policy review and a law review that's implicit. I'm left just, and again, I'm asking the question, but I'm really, I don't know that there's an obvious answer to it. If in the APA there's a policy review and there's a law review that are both implicit, and the General Assembly takes that exact same language and moves it to local government, and then again gives you the policy, the reviewer of written policy, that being the chief administrative officer, did the General Assembly just intend for law to be just kind of hanging out there?
Your Honor,
go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I was talking to myself and not getting an intelligent answer.
Your Honor, I think there's several reasons why this statute doesn't actually provide for appellate review of this decision. Number one, these grievance procedures are an act of legislative grace. That is a quote from an appellate decision in this Commonwealth that says these grievance procedures are permissive. I mean, the General Assembly doesn't have to allow them at all. And so when the General Assembly circumscribes what your judicial review rights are under those grievance provisions, then they're limited to what's expressly set out in the statute. And I think 2.2.3006 differs from the language in 15.2.1507, because what 2.2.3006 says, within 30 days of a final decision, a party may appeal on the grounds that the determination is contradictory to law by filing a notice of appeal with the clerk of the circuit court in the appropriate jurisdiction. The other argument I would make in favor of the position that there aren't appeal rights is that the General Assembly in 1996 amended this 15.2.1507 to add this subsection B, which says, notwithstanding the contrary provisions of this section, a final hearing decision rendered under the provisions of this section, which would result in the reinstatement of any employee of a sheriff's office who has been terminated for cause, may be reviewed by the circuit court for the locality upon the petition of the locality. I mean, that language, I think, clearly sets out, says, notwithstanding the contrary provisions of this statute, meaning...
With a state grievance procedure, it expressly provides for circuit court and then subsequent review, and that's completely absent here.
Yes, and I think...
Counsel, what about the fact, getting back to my question of law is just left out there, has to be consistent, but it's just left out there. This code section, and I agree with you, it is very difficult to wade through, but it provides that the Redevelopment and Housing Authority's provisions, its grievance procedure has to be consistent with the state's grievance procedure, in essence. And so if the state's grievance procedure, final step with regard to whether it's consistent with the law, goes to a circuit court, wouldn't it be consistent not to just leave law out there unaddressed by anyone, but it follow the state procedure as this policy did, that a question of law goes to a circuit court?
Your Honor, I think that that's not an easy question for me to answer, but my response would be this. The grievance procedure can be consistent with state grievance procedure without including a right of appeal, because it's not the grievance procedure that confers the right of appeal. It's the statute. I mean, the right of appeal cannot be created out of thin air by RRHA.
If the statute provides that it's consistent with the state's grievance procedure, it would not be created out of thin air, would it? Wouldn't it be created out of the authority and the statute?
I submit that the grievance procedure itself, how the grievance proceeds, can not provide for a right of appeal and still be consistent with the state
policy.
So
you think that the General Assembly thought about this and decided that the thing that management holds most dear, the ability to run its workplace and to make final decisions, the General Assembly would have thought about that and said, you know, with regard to law, we're just going to leave that to a hearing officer and management will just have to abide by that.
Your Honor, I would respond to that by directing the court to its decision in Virginia Pilot Media Companies v. Dow Jones. That case said courts cannot add language to a statute the General Assembly has not seen fit to include. There's no language in this statute that provides for a right to appeal to the circuit court.
Well, but counsel, let me ask one quick question on that point, though. The statute does say or, I mean, you can have a procedure like a locality does, or a grievance procedure consistent with Title 2.2. So why do any of the other provisions of 1507 matter once you are not a locality subject to under 15.5 or 36? Why do any of the 1507 provisions apply from that point? Because it's basically an opt-out. And once you opt out and have a procedure consistent with 2.2, why doesn't 2.2 govern from that point forward?
Well, Your Honor, I see I've run out of time. But
you can answer any question that's pending.
Yes. I think that can be answered by looking back at 15.21507B. I mean, that provision was added, and it says it limits the judicial review of these decisions specifically to an employee of a sheriff's office. I don't think that the General Assembly incorporated by reference the right to appeal under 2.2-3006 by stating that the Redevelopment Authority's grievance procedure must be consistent with 2.2-3000 at SEC. I do not think that was the intention of the...
But that's exactly what the language says. But anyway, that's fine.
All right. Your time has expired. Mr. McLaughlin, Mr. Sarrett did not use up your rebuttal time. The court did.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, good morning. My name is Robert Lofton from McGuire Woods on behalf of the Appalachia, the Richmond Redevelopment Housing Authority. Justice Powell and Justice McClanahan, I think the questions that you asked at the end of Appellant's argument are the analysis that the court should engage in looking at whether a circuit court has subject matter jurisdiction of RRHA's grievance proceedings. Here, the General Assembly in 1507A4, as the court recognized last year in the Walker case, the General Assembly has said that a housing authority and a community service board may either comply with 1506 and 1507, or they may adopt a grievance policy that is consistent with Chapter 30 of Title 2.2. And that's exactly what RRHA has done here. Its grievance proceeding, its grievance policy, specifically allows for an appellate right to the circuit court for the city of Richmond, completely consistent with 2.2-3006B. And we think that is the end of the inquiry.
Well, you might think that's the end of the inquiry, but
yes, sir.
You've got this sheriff provision sitting out there. It's interesting because despite excellent lawyering, each side has a very significant weakness to their argument. I think we very definitely probed the law and written policy aspect for the appellant's side. But deal with that sheriff provision. I mean, there's a rule of statutory construction that says, and you know it well, that says if they dealt with one, that they meant to exclude the others.
Well, I think that the sheriff provision, I mean, I think the way you, the easy answer to that, Justice Mims, is the General Assembly in 1507B specifically deals with the unique situation of the sheriff's office and what to do when there's a decision to reinstate an employee in the sheriff's office. So the General Assembly dealt with that in 1507B. For housing authorities like RRHA, the General Assembly addressed that in 1507A4 and said housing authorities may adopt a grievance policy pursuant to 1506 and 1507, or RRHA may adopt a policy that's consistent with Chapter 30 of Title 2.2.
Yeah, and
so I think
the consistent with language doesn't say, if they intended that it would be exactly the same as 2.2, they should have just simply said, "You shall follow 2.2. You go to 2.2, and just that's your grievance procedure." Instead of saying consistent with 2.2, I don't know exactly what consistent with means.
Well, consistent with is a phrase that the General Assembly has used, by my count, 864 times in the Code of Virginia.
Give or take.
Give or take one or two. The first time is in Code Section 1-201, where the General Assembly said that the Acts of Parliament continue in effect to the extent they are consistent with the Bill of Rights, the Constitution of Virginia, and the Code of Virginia.
Yeah.
So it's a phrase that the General Assembly uses over and over again in the Code, and I think in this context of
so you shall not do anything that is inconsistent with the APA, with 2.2. But nonetheless, it doesn't say that it has to be identical to 2.2.
No, sir. And I think that's intentional in order to give agencies discretion to craft a grievance policy and a grievance proceeding to suit its needs. And so here, RRHA, pursuant to the authority that it's been given under 1507A4, has crafted a grievance policy that specifically allows for the appellate review that's contemplated by 2.2-3060.
To follow up on that, it could not be identical with 2.2 because 2.2 provides for appeals to the Department of Personnel and Training and the state's Director of Employee Grievance, whatever that title is. And so it couldn't be exactly like that because there are not those comparable entities for housing authority. So it would have to be consistent by supplementing the appropriate people or
correct.
Agencies.
Correct. And consistent is not identical. You know, Webster's defines consistent as marked by harmony, regularity, or steady continuity, compatible with or in agreement to. So I think the General Assembly, what they have done here is they've said for housing authorities and the other subset of entities that are applicable under 1507A4, they can adopt a policy that's consistent with Chapter 30 of Title 2.2. And so the agencies are given some leeway to say, well, you know, we like this part of 2.2. We're going to craft a policy. And as long as the policy is consistent with Chapter 30 of Title 2.2, I think it's lawful. And I think here, pursuant to 1507A4 and 2.2-3006B, the Circuit Court for the City of Richmond had subject matter jurisdiction to hear RRHA's appeal.
Counsel, instead of looking at a direct appeal.
Yes, sir.
If you were proceeding only under 15.2 and you had a question, obviously you have a question of law as opposed to written policy, and if you had filed a declaratory judgment action on that question, the court would have had jurisdiction over a declaratory judgment without question.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So I think that the General Assembly,
So the Circuit Court has jurisdiction to hear these questions. I think the only issue is how do you get it to the court?
Yes, sir. And I think here the vehicle that the General Assembly has allowed is either party. It has given discretion to agencies, in this context housing authorities, to craft a policy that's consistent with Chapter 30 of Title 2.2.
May I interrupt you there, but DEC actions don't create rights of action or causes of actions. DEC actions are only remedial provisions, which presupposes subject matter jurisdiction. So you don't get subject matter jurisdiction over an area of law because you have a DEC action at the top of your complaint.
Yes, sir, Justice.
So if the statutory law, let's say expressly, suppose the statute expressly precluded judicial review of a grievance procedure, you couldn't go get a DEC action circuit court and say, well, I'm just going to do it through a DEC action because the underlying cause of action is barred by statute. So that, I don't follow the logic of saying that, well, you can do it indirectly, so therefore you must be able to do it directly.
Right. So I took Justice Mims's question to be that if we were talking about another locality outside of a housing authority.
I wasn't presuming that you could therefore do it directly. I was just exploring whether there was a prohibition on the circuit court dealing with the question.
I do not think so, Justice Mims and Justice Kelsey. I think in the context of the declaratory judgment action, let's say the General Assembly had not specifically carved out the housing authority like it did in 1507A4. I think a housing authority or some other local entity could come in to a circuit court and file a declaratory judgment action that a hearing officer or a panel decision in a grievance context was contrary to law and to seek a declaratory judgment to that effect.
Can I change the question just a little bit? When, as is mentioned before, both sides have made very credible arguments as to what the possible inferences are of statutory intent, but the statute is pretty opaque on the question we're talking about. What's wrong with this response? You back away and you say, you know what, none of us know for sure. We're just going to use basic statutory principles because those are the tiebreaker principles when we don't know the truth. One powerful tiebreaking principle is, in this very statute, three times judicial review is specifically addressed and given procedural context. And yet, for reasons none of us really know for sure, is conspicuously absent on the subject we're talking about. Why isn't the right response to the judiciary to say, look, you've made it super clear in the very statute we're talking about where you want judicial review. You said nothing on this subject. The natural presumption is you didn't want it. If you do want judicial review on this particular subject, you can add it at the next session of the General Assembly.
Justice Kelsey, I think I would agree with everything you said if the General Assembly had not said what it said in 1507A4, that a housing authority may adopt a grievance policy that is consistent with Chapter 30 of Title 2.2. And in 1507 alone, the General Assembly has used the phrase consistent with seven times. Three of those times are saying that, are articulating that a grievance policy can be consistent with Chapter 30 of Title 2.2. And so I think what the General Assembly has done here is it has specifically incorporated, and going back to Justice Mendez's point about the Administrative Process Act, it has specifically incorporated some aspects of the state grievance procedure into 1507. And it has allowed localities to incorporate aspects of the state grievance procedure if it desires to do so. So localities are given the discretion to operate under 1507 or, where applicable, to incorporate to create a policy.
Could a housing authority create a grievance policy that precluded judicial review of law?
Certainly, yes, sir.
So the subject matter jurisdiction of the court depends upon a decision of the housing authority?
I think in the specific context of a direct appeal to a circuit court, the way 1507 is written, if you took out 1507A4, I do think a housing authority could craft a grievance policy.
So if the circuit court started to rule against the housing authority on a round of grievances on a particular subject matter, they could just change the plan and cut the circuit court out for the next 20 grievances?
Certainly, they could, yes, sir.
How would that be consistent with 2.2 then?
Well, I was assuming Justice Kelsey's question to me if 1507A4 did not say what it said. So I thought that was the presupposition of your question. I think given what RRHA has done, and RRHA was overruled in the Housing Authority in an appeal in the Richmond Circuit Court in 2009 in the Gillum case, and RRHA did not alter its grievance policy.
But in theory, as you interpret the code, and we represented the Housing Authority after a round of defeats, we go back and say, we're going to change this provision, and we'll be able to cut out the entire circuit court review.
It could, I think, but I do think that opens up the door, to go back to Justice Mims' question. I think if the Housing Authority did that, while technically it could do that, it still would be susceptible to challenges through...
Well, it'd go into the deck action, and they'd say to the judge, we have the authority to do that, for the very reason you say.
And the other provisions of 1507 specifically...
Is one response to that, that at that point you're not consistent with the procedures of 2.2, et cetera?
Yes, sir. And so, Justice McCullough...
If you're consistent with that, may give you some flexibility, but it wouldn't necessarily give you infinite flexibility to
correct.
Do anything more.
Correct.
The RHA has to establish a grievance procedure consistent with. Is the appellate right? I mean, we're assuming that that's parked under the umbrella of a grievance procedure, but might that be separate from the grievance procedure?
I guess theoretically, Justice McCullough, it could be. I think here, going back, looking at 1507A4, and given that RRHA has specifically adopted a policy in order to be consistent with Chapter 30 of Title 2.2, I don't think that could be done. So RRHA respectfully submits that pursuant to 1507A4, it had the authority to craft a grievance policy that was either consistent with 1507 or consistent with Chapter 30 of Title 2.2. RRHA, in its discretion, has elected to adopt a grievance policy that's consistent with Chapter 30 of Title 2.2. And pursuant to 2.2-3006B, that allows an appellate right of review to the Circuit Court for the City of Richmond. And RHA would, unless the Court has any further questions, RHA would respectfully ask the Court to find that the Circuit Court of the City of Richmond had subject matter jurisdiction and to otherwise affirm the judgment of the Circuit Court.
Thank you very much. Call the next case.